radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio. On today's program, we'll enjoy a rendition of The Whistler and Hasty Conclusion from 1947. But first, let's enjoy a bit of comedy, the comedy of Jack Benny. Jack Benny was not only the most successful comedian on radio, but also revolutionized radio comedy. The Jack Benny program aired from May of 1932 through May of 1955 and featured one of radio's best-loved casts. Jack's wife, Sadie Marks, as Mary Livingstone, wisecracking bandleader Phil Harris and later Bob Crosby on music, tenor Dennis Day, and of course, Eddie Rochester Anderson and announcer Don Wilson. On this edition of the Jack Benny program from 1942, Jack takes two cadets to Barbara Stanwyck's house. Broadcasting from an Army air base at Santa Ana in Southern California, Jack listens to a radio soap opera, announces that he's donating his infamous Maxwell car to a wartime scrap metal drive, and brings two sightseeing cadets to visit Barbara Stanwyck. From October of 1942, it's the Jack Benny program on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow knows, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past to smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
March played by the orchestra. Now, ladies and gentlemen, since we're at the Army Air Base at Santa Ana, we would like to reenact the scene which took place last Thursday when two cadets from this very field paid a visit to Jack Benny at his home in Beverly Hills.
Oh, Don, who wants to hear about that?
Jack and Rochester were hard at work in the kitchen, as I understand it, little suspecting that anyone would drop in.
Oh, boy, that sure smells good. I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle as I go riding. See, what else? Tomatoes, vinegar, onions. Oh, Rochester, did you cut up those onions like I told you to? Rochester, did you cut up those onions?
I'm cutting them up now, boss.
Oh, pull yourself together. How many onions you got there?
About five, boss. Do you want any more?
Yes, get busy. And stop crying.
I can't help it, boss.
Look, Rochester, if the onions make you cry while you're chopping them up, don't stand so close to them.
Close to them? I'm using a hoe now.
All right, I'll do the onions. And you get these jars ready. Have you got the labels?
Here they are. Mother Benny's old-fashioned homemade chili sauce.
Hey, they're pretty fancy, aren't they?
Yeah, and I like our new slogan. Our chili is hot on rump roaster pot.
Yeah, that ought to get us plenty of customers. Well, I might as well finish these onions myself.
This sauce don't look just right. You know, boss, I don't think we got enough tomatoes in here. I said I don't think we got enough tomatoes in here. Shall I put some more tomatoes in, Mr. Benny?
There's plenty of tomatoes in there. All the recipe calls for. Well, the onions are ready. Dump them in, Rochester.
Okay.
I want to get all this stuff cooked and bottled before Miss Livingston gets here. I promise to take her shopping.
It's only 10:30, boss.
10:30? Oh, my goodness, tune in the radio, Rochester. Tune it in.
What's the matter?
It's time for that program. Tune in the radio.
Oh, yes. Yes! Sally Sutton!
I don't want to miss today's episode.
Here's the station, boss.
Thank heaven.
And so, chin up, but with tear-dimmed eyes, Sally Sutton has given up hope of a reconciliation with her husband, Paul, and decided on the most drastic of all steps, a divorce.
Her husband has been playing around, Rochester. That's all she can do.
Hasn't she got a razor?
No. Now listen.
As we fade in on the Sutton cottage, a cottage that was once a happy American home, we find Sally in conference with her friend and advisor, old Judge Hooper. Sally is speaking.
I can't go on, Judge Hooper. I can't go on like this. It's too much.
There now, Sally.
What? I've given Paul the best years of my life.
Yes, Sally, honey. And I have to admire the way you've gone through all this. Chin up, but with tear-dimmed eyes.
You said it.
Tell me, old Judge Hooper, what shall I do about Paul?
You might as well face it, Sally, honey. Paul's a drinking man. And if when there's one thing I can't stand, it's a drinking man.
Well, what's that?
I think the old judge is loaded.
Oh, he couldn't be.
And your advice, Judge?
You just got to get a divorce, Sally, honey.
Open up, quick.
Oh, my goodness. Sally's house is on fire.
That's us, boss. The chili sauce just boiled over.
Well, shut off the gas and stir it.
Come in. Why, it's old Doc Thompson.
Hello, Sally. Hello, old Judge Hooper.
Hello, old Doc, honey.
He calls everybody honey.
I've got bad news for you, Sally. It's about your husband, Paul.
Paul? What about Paul?
The emergency hospital called just now and told me...
Yes?
That your husband...
Yes, yes.
That your husband, Paul...
Yes, yes, yes. There goes that gobbledarn radio again. Quick, Rochester, fix it.
Fix it?
Yes, hit it. Take it. Shake it.
That's the way you're fixing the alarm clock.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me do it. Of all time for this thing to go haywire, I want to know what happened to Paul. Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. You ready to take me shopping?
I can't take you now, Mary. Paul's in the emergency hospital.
Paul Whiteman?
No. Paul Sutton. The darn radio went on the blink.
Right in the middle of the heartaches of Sally Sutton. Fix it, boss.
There, good. Good, it's working again. Quiet now. Quiet, Rochester.
And so, don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning, folks. For another installment in the heartaches of Sally Sutton.
Well, I'll be...
Till then, this is Truman Clapsaddle. Saying au revoir.
Wait a minute, what happened to Paul?
Oh, shut up!
Well, I'll just have to wait until tomorrow morning, I guess. Let's get back to our canning, Rochester.
What is that stuff, Jack?
Homemade chili sauce. Come on, Rochester, let's start pouring it in the bottle. You hold the funnel.
Oh, fine. Chili sauce and bromo seltzer bottles.
Well, I had a lot of them around. You know how I worry. Now, come on, Rochester, let's get this stuff all bottled. I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
That jingle, jangle,
as I
jingle,
go riding merrily
as
along.
As I go riding merrily
and they sing, oh, ain't you glad you're
free. Oh, ain't you
and that song ain't so
blue.
ladies and gentlemen, let us continue with our story of what happened when the two cadets from Santa Ana visited Jack's home. As you remember, Jack, Mary, and Rochester were bottling chili sauce in the kitchen.
As I go riding merrily. There, that's that. Now, how many bottles did we get out of this batch, Rochester?
3 dozen, not counting the two that blew up.
Blew up? I didn't hear any of them blow up.
Look for yourself, boss. That ain't a sunset on the ceiling.
Well, wipe it off. Come on, Mary, I'll take you shopping. The car's out in the driveway.
Okay.
And incidentally, Mary, this will be your last ride in the Maxwell. I'm turning it in next week to the junk salvage drive.
Do you think they'll take it?
Yes. Come on, grab a few of these bottles. I got a rush order from the farmer's market.
I am not walking through Beverly Hills with my arm full of chili sauce.
Oh, all right, I'll take it. There.
Uh-oh, here comes that crazy boy of ours, boss.
He's not crazy. Well, hello, Mr. Billingsley.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Taking some of your blood to the Red Cross, I think.
No. No, Mr. Billingsley. This is chili sauce. By the way, would you like to go to the farmer's market with us?
No, thank you. I must go out to my laboratory and work on my new parachute idea.
What's that?
I'm putting ripcords on mushrooms.
Mushrooms for rip? For parachutes? My goodness. My goodness, isn't that dangerous?
Oh, yes. You might get a toadstool. Well, goodbye, Mr. Benny.
Goodbye.
Why, Joe, you certainly are.
Now it's parachutes. That Mr. Billingsley certainly is a genius when it comes to inventing things.
Oh, yeah? How about that wristwatch he made for me?
What's the matter with that watch?
Every time I go to wind it, the hands get fresh with me.
Oh, stop dreaming things up, will you? See who's at the door, Rochester.
Okay, Mother Benny.
That's only for the label. Now, see who's at the door.
Okay.
That Rochester is so lazy today.
Well, naturally, it's Thursday, his day off.
Not so loud. I didn't tear Wednesday off the calendar. Well, look who's here. Phil Harris.
And he's got his baby with him. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Jackson. Mary. You know, I had the kid out for a ride on my motorcycle, so I thought I'd drop in.
What? You brought a 5-month-old baby all the way from Encino on a motorcycle?
We only made one stop, Jackson. Changed oil and diapers.
That kid's probably scared to death.
Ah, Jackson, she loved it.
Oh, what a baby. Always laughing.
Yeah. You know, Phil, I think she's going to have curly hair just like you.
Sure, them things are liable to be hereditary.
Hereditary?
He means it runs in the family.
I know what he means. Now, there she goes giggling again.
Oh, let me hold the baby, Phil.
No, Mary. Just let her sit on the table here and play with these bottles.
Careful now, darling. Careful now, sweetheart. Make a note of that, Rochester. 1 bottle of chili sauce for Mr. Harris, 15 cents. Sorry, Phil.
Wait a minute now. I ain't responsible for nothing my kid does. This baby's a minor.
I don't care if she's John L. Lewis. You're paying for that. Now, come on, fork over. Uh-oh.
Now, see what you did? You made the baby cry.
Now, baby. Here's another bottle of chili sauce to play with. Your daddy can afford it. Here, take the bottle. There now.
Look out, Jack. Duck!
Ooh.
Holy smoke, she knocked him out.
Quick, Rochester, get some water. Mr. Benny's unconscious.
Let him lay there. He ain't been getting much sleep lately.
Oh, he's coming too, Jack. Jack, speak to me.
Oh, where am I?
Sorry, Jackson, but my baby conked you with a bottle.
Did the bottle break?
Absolutely not.
No sale, Jack.
Oh, my head. Listen, Phil. It's all right for you and your baby to come over and pay me a friendly visit. But when that kid of yours deliberately picks up a bottle of Mother Benny's old-fashioned homemade chili sauce and cocks her old Uncle Jack on the head with it, that's going to...
P-A-T-H, I got a gal in Kalamazoo. I don't want a boast, but I know she's the toast of Kalamazoo. Zoo, 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 zoo. Years have gone by, my, 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 how she grew. But I liked her looks when I carried her books in Kalamazoo. Zoo, 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 zoo. I'm gonna send a wire, hopping on a flyer, leaving today. Am I dreaming? I can hear screaming, hiya, Mr. Jackson. Everything's okay, A-L-A-M-A-Z-O-O. What a gal, she's something rude. I'll make my bid for that freckle-faced kid I'm hurrying through. I'm going to Michigan to see the sweetest gal in Kalamazoo. Gonna send a wire, hopping on a flyer, leaving today. Am I dreaming? I can hear screaming, hiya Jackson, everything's okay. A-L-A-M-A-Z-O-O. What a gal, she's some kibaroo. I'll make my bid for that freckle-faced kid I'm hurrying to. I'm going to Michigan to see the sweetest gal in Kalamazoo. Zoo, 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 Kalamazoo.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now let us continue with our story of what happened when the two cadets from Santa Ana visited Jack in Beverly Hills. As we left Jack, he'd been knocked cold by a tap from a tiny clock.
Look at that lump on my head. I'm glad Phil took the baby home. Believe me, the next time that kid starts after me, I'm going to be set. I'm going to be ready.
Oh, put your fist down, killer.
Well, I'm mad. Come on, let's take these bottles over to the market. You take the bottles out, Rochester. I'll answer the door. Coming, coming. I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle. Ooh, my head. As I go riding. Well, 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 a couple of soldiers. Hello, fellas.
Hello. Hey, we're cadets from Santa Ana, and we're visiting the movie stars' homes.
You are?
Yeah. Can you tell us where Miss Barbara Stanwyck lives?
Barbara Stanwyck?
Uh-huh.
Yes, yes, she lives about four blocks down the street. But as long as you're visiting some of the big movie stars. this happens to be Jack Benny's house. I'm Benny.
Oh, is your son at home?
No, look, I'm Jack Benny, me. Jello again. I mean, Grape Nuts Place again. This is Jack Benny. come on in, boys.
What do you got that dress on for?
Oh, this is an apron. I've been making chili sauce. Come on in.
Oh, well, thanks just the same, but we're especially anxious to meet Barbara Stanwyck.
Oh, yes, yes. Babs. She's a swell girl.
Babs? Who's Babs?
That's Barbara Stanwyck, you see. All her close friends call her Babs. I'll tell you what, fellas, it's only a short way. I'll walk you over there.
Come on, Jack. Let's go shopping.
Oh, Mary, come here a minute. I want you fellas to meet Mary Livingston. She's a stooge on my program.
What was that?
Don't sneak up on me. Mary, these boys are cadets from Santa Ana.
Oh, hello, fellas.
Gee, Mary Livingston.
Wow, a woman.
I didn't know we had so many people in our front yard. Say, Mary, I promised to take the boys over to Bab's house. Would you like to come along?
Who's Bab?
Bab Stanwyck, Barbara.
Come on, fellas, let's go. Well, here we are. I hope Babs is home. I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle. Are you excited, boys?
Oh, we sure are. Good afternoon.
Jack Benny. These two cadets would like to meet Miss Stanwyck. Come on, fellas, let's go in.
Just a moment, please. Miss Stanwyck is taking a bath.
Oh. Oh, then I'll wait.
You certainly will.
Say, you'll love Babs, fella. She's my favorite, too.
Who's that at the door down there?
Down there is the butler's name. It's me, Jack Benny. Hello, Barbara.
Oh, hello, Jack.
A lot of people in her house, too. Say, Barbara, can you come down a minute? I've got something I want to see you about.
Jack, I told you yesterday. I've got enough chili sauce to last me 6 years.
Oh, it's not about chili sauce. I got a couple of cadets from Santa Ana with me. They want to meet you.
Oh, then I'll be right down.
Won't you step in and wait, folks?
Thank you.
By Jove, you certainly are.
He must be a friend of Mr. Billingsley's. Oh, here's Barbara now.
Hello, Mary. How are you, fellas?
Hello, Barbara.
Gee, glad to meet you, Miss Stanwyck.
We've sure been looking forward to this.
Hiya, Barbara.
Good heavens, Jack. What are you doing in that apron?
Oh, Mary, why didn't you remind me to take off this apron?
I didn't know if you had any pants on.
I've got pants on, but you can't see them. That Rochester got so patriotic, he cut my cuffs way up to the knees. Sit down, fellas.
Yes, please do.
You know, the boys were over at my house, but they were a little impatient. They were just dying to meet Babs.
Babs? Who's that?
You. You. All your close friends call you Babs.
Well, I'll be darned. Oh, by the way, would you boys care for a sandwich or something?
Oh, no, thank you, Miss Stanwyck. Just looking at you is enough.
Well, how about your buddy? Would you like a sandwich?
I'm looking at Miss Livingston.
Well, say, I'm hungry, Barbara. I can stand a sandwich.
Well, why don't you go out in the kitchen and make one? You're all dressed for it.
Good. Well, never mind. I'll just have some of these walnuts here. May I?
Go right ahead if I'm not too late.
Thanks.
So you boys are cadets from Santa Ana, huh?
Mm-hmm. My name is Bill Orr, and I'm going to be a bombardier. My buddy here, Peter Hayes, he's studying to be a navigator.
Well, that's wonderful. A bombardier and a navigator.
I'd like to be a pilot. That's for me. Oh, gee, these nuts are good.
Now, wait a minute, Jack.
Well, how many did I eat?
I don't mean that. I mean that the bombardier and the navigator are just as important as the pilot. Their jobs are equally as interesting and require just as much training.
All right. I can't be a pilot anyway. I'm over 26. Or did they raise the age limit to 36?
Till they put wings on rocking chairs, you don't have to worry.
I don't know about that. Boy, these are the best walnuts.
Gee, Miss Stanwyck, you sure got a beautiful home here.
Well, I'm certainly happy you dropped in. Oh, by the way, where are you boys from?
Oh, I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I've only been out here about 2 months.
Scranton, Pennsylvania. And where are you from?
I'm from St. Joe, Missouri.
St. Joe. They love me there.
Well, fellas, you've seen Babs. Come back to my house. I'll call up some girls, and the three of us will step out.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. The boys will have a better time right here. Besides, I've seen those girls you go out with.
Did you ever get a load of that one that floats around Beverly Hills on a broomstick?
Quiet.
Oh, I know. Say, Mary, why don't you and I take the boys to the Brown Derby? There's usually a lot of picture people there.
Oh, boy, the Brown Derby?
We can't go to the Brown Derby. They don't use my chili sauce.
Oh, you and your chili sauce. I've tried it, and it's awful.
Oh, yeah? Have you ever tried it on lobster?
Yes, and the lobster thumbed his feelers at me.
Well, naturally, a lobster has to be boiled.
Boiled or sober. He didn't like it.
Well, then I guess I better tear up that testimonial I signed your name to. Say, I've got an idea. Why can't we all go over to Bob Murphy?
Now, look, Jack, you're not coming with us. Barb and I are going to have lunch with the two boys alone.
Yes, and later this evening, we'll go dancing at the Macumba.
I can't go dancing.
Nobody asked you to go.
Oh, they didn't, eh? Well, let me tell you something. These boys came all the way to Beverly Hills to see me, and I'm going along.
If you do, you'll pay the check.
We'll see about that, sister. Let me tell you something else, you Brooklyn bombshell. When it comes to showing these cadets a good time, I know the hot spots too. I didn't get these bags under my eyes for nothing.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what happened when two cadets from Santa Ana came to visit Barbara Stanwyck at her home in Beverly Hills.
They came to visit me, Playfield. Gee, these nuts are good. Good night, everybody.
Jack Benny's program is written by Bill Maher and Eddie Beloy. Peter Lind Hayes and Bill Orr, who appeared on our program, are cadets here at Santa Ana. The presentation of the broadcast from the Army Air Base at Santa Ana is for the enjoyment of the officers and personnel and does not constitute an endorsement of our product by the War Department.
From October of 1942, it's been a wartime rendition of the Jack Benny program with special guest star Barbara Stanwyck. In a moment, hasty conclusion, The Whistler, starring Bill Forman, as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Whistler narrated his strange tales from May of 1942 through July of 1955 over the CBS West Coast Network. Weekly, he announced his arrival with an eerie 13-tone musical theme composed by Wilbur Hatch. The same Wilbur Hatch that would go on to conduct the Desi Arnaz Orchestra on the I Love Lucy TV program. Gail Gordon portrayed the Whistler in the audition broadcast and was followed by Joseph Kearns, later Suspense's Man in Black. Bill Forman starred in the title role through most of the West Coast 13-year radio run, while announcer Marvin Miller filled in as the Whistler during Forman's brief military service. From May of 1947, it's Hasty Conclusion, starring Bill Forman as the Whistler, Charles Halton as Professor Wagner, and Norman Field as Dr. Phillips. The college dean plagiarizes the research of a deceased graduate student, but another professor finds out and uses the information to blackmail the department head. From 1947, it's
The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Rated by independent research, the most popular West Coast program in radio history. And now, The Whistler's strange story. Hasty conclusion. Professor Wagner sat in his office in the old brick chemistry building. A late issue of the chemistry journal open on the desk before him. The drowsy afternoon sounds of the campus and the reassuring tick of his secretary's typewriter made him sleepy, unable to concentrate on his reading. The article was in fine print, and the professor found himself tempted to drop it into the wastebasket. But he was forced to continue reading. When the dean published, the rest of the department was expected to read it. Suddenly, he turned back the pages and reread the article more carefully. His mind shuttling between memory and suspicion. Why was all this so familiar? Could it be what he suspected? His secretary, with her spinster's efficiency, would know.
Very interesting. Very. Oh, Miss Rhodes.
Yes, Professor Wagner?
Did you type this latest article of Dean Emerson's?
Why, yes. Good, isn't it? He's had much favorable comment.
The subject interests me. Didn't it seem familiar to you?
Yes, it did. I remember thinking so when I typed it.
Any idea where you might have read it before?
Why, some thesis notes. One of the students.
That's it, of course. Nielsen's notes.
Nielsen? Oh, yes, the graduate student.
Where are they, Miss Rose?
In the files. I remember you particularly wanted them saved.
Get them. Oh, this is too good to be true.
Let me see. Lloyd Nielsen. Poor man, such a tragedy. So young to be taken like that.
Yes. Very unfortunate. Are they there?
Yes, here they are. Oh, all that research and never to finish it. It doesn't seem right.
I'll take them, please. Now let's see the dean's article. Here. Yes, identical. I thought this was better than his usual dribble. Get him on the phone, Miss Rose.
But he's lunching at the faculty club.
Call him there. Tell him I want to see him at 3:00.
But he's...
He, if there's any question, tell him it's about the late Mr. Nielsen.
I'm pleased that you like my paper, Wagner.
An important contribution, Dean Emerson. You have every reason to be proud.
I'm glad of any prestige I may bring to the college.
And rightly so. The next dean will have quite a position to maintain.
And that's not immediate. I have many more good years.
Still, there's always the unforeseen. The little mistakes that can end a career so untimely.
Wagner, what's on your mind?
A student named Nielsen. Lloyd Nielsen.
Nielsen?
The name means something to you?
No.
Oh, surely you remember him, the one who died?
We've had so many students.
Not like him. He did a brilliant piece of research. Something about the valence of barium.
Oh, I recall it vaguely. Too bad he didn't finish.
He did. His findings have been published.
But that's impossible. How could he?
Come, Emerson. I just told you I read your paper.
What are you suggesting?
You stole Nielsen's material and published it as your own.
You can't mean that. You have no proof.
In my files, there's another version of those notes. Enough to prove you're a plagiarist, a thief.
You're lying. There are no other notes.
Oh, yes, there are. You forget Nielsen was my student, too.
It must have been a mistake, a coincidence.
If the papers had been in your own field, toxicology, yes. But they weren't, Emerson.
You've never liked me, Wagner. This is nothing but malice.
Call it ethics.
And you want to expose me for the sake of your ethics.
Oh, then you admit there's something to expose.
Well, Wagner, isn't there some way we can settle this quietly?
That's better. May I smoke?
Yes, certainly. Have one of mine.
Thank you. Yes, Emerson. There is a way. Quiet, but honorable, of course.
Anything.
Naturally, for the good of the college, I'll have to ask you to withdraw.
Withdraw?
But I'll be fair. I'll keep the reason to myself.
Generous of you.
I think so.
But to give up my whole career, you don't know what you're asking.
Better than having the truth come out.
Wagner, for heaven's sake, must it be this way?
Just what you would do in my place, isn't it?
I see. And I have no choice but to resign.
Very wise.
I suppose I should thank you.
Well, there's a way to show your gratitude. As chairman of the appointments board, you can name your successor.
My successor? Do you mean that
yes,
you...
I'll expect to replace you as dean.
So that's your ethics. Why, you... I won't do it.
Oh, you're suddenly very scrupulous.
You contempt... Get out of my office.
Very well. Then the truth will have to be known.
I'll deny it. I'll discredit you.
All right, a scandal, if you like.
Get out of here.
You'll hear from me later, Emerson.
Oh, no, wait, Wagner. I'll come back. I'll do as you say. Anything to...
I thought you'd see it my way. I want your resignation right away.
Right away? Can't you give me some time?
How much time?
Well, a day or two anyway.
So you can squirm out of it? No. I can't wait that long.
But a few hours at least, this evening. Come to dinner at my house tonight. Mrs. Emerson retires early, and we can talk about it afterwards.
What time?
6:30.
All right. 6:30.
I'll have an answer for you then.
There's only one possible answer. Good afternoon, Dean.
You're sure you won't have some coffee, Professor?
Thank you, Mrs. Emerson. Nothing more.
Marion, don't insist on coffee when I've told you I'm serving port.
But everyone doesn't like port, Charles.
You mean you don't?
Well, that isn't what I meant at all. You're so irritable this evening, dear.
Nothing of the sort.
Well, it's always a sign when you're worried. Is something wrong?
I've told you nothing's wrong, Marion. Drop it. Here you are, Professor. Rather good color, don't you think?
Thank you. You're not having any?
Oh, not supposed to. Trouble with my eyes. Go ahead.
Very good. Very good indeed. Pleasant here in the summer house.
Yes, the dean enjoys dining out here. Although I feel it's still early in the season. There's a chill in the air.
If you're cold, Marion, perhaps you wouldn't mind...
Oh, of course. You two have business to talk over.
If you're asleep when I leave, I'll see you Monday.
Leave? Oh, yes, the ski club. I'd forgotten.
I'll be going as soon as the professor and I finish.
Well, I hope the snow is still good, Charles. Well, good night, Professor.
Sorry to hurry you off, Mrs. Emerson.
Oh, you're not. I want to get back to my detective story. So interesting. I tell the dean he ought to write one. With his knowledge of toxicology, he must know many clever poisons that leave no trace.
Marry him, for heaven's sake.
Well, after all, they're only stories. No one behaves as they do in books, do they, Professor?
Huh? I don't know.
Oh, I mean, the victims are so stupid. If a man's your enemy, you don't blindly allow him to poison
you. Well, you go, Marion. You rattle on and
sure,
on.
Sure, Rose. I hate to have you drive to the ski club in this state. You are worried.
I'm not worried, Marion. Besides, I'm driving up with Dr. Phillips.
Oh, well, all right, dear. Well, good night, Professor.
Good night.
Well, Wagner, I've considered your demand.
Have you?
There's nothing else for me to do but to agree.
Nothing else?
I'll resign at once, and you'll be appointed dean.
Nothing else, Emerson? No other way?
What do you mean?
Very clever of you. Getting me to dinner and then? I know what you've done.
Done?
I see it all now. You've poisoned me.
What?
There was poison in that wine.
Poison? Why, you're mad.
Your wife gave you away, didn't she?
Oh. Wagner. Oh. Wagner, why are you doubled over like that?
The pain. My stomach. You won't get away with it.
Please, you listen to me, Wagner.
Dr. Phillips, I'll get him. Cross the street.
You can't tell him a story like that. I won't let you.
Get away.
No.
Let me go.
No, listen to me. I didn't poison you.
Let me go. Let me go, I say.
Wagner, don't. Put down that decanter, Wagner!
For a stunned moment, you stand there. And then suddenly find yourself running pell-mell down the gravel path toward the garden gate, doubled over, clutching at the burning pain in your stomach, knowing it's your life now, unless you can get across the street to the doctor's office before the poison strikes you down. A minute later, you stumble up the steps and burst into the doctor's office.
Phillips acts quickly, efficiently.
Pulse the shade fast, blood pressure up a bit. That's probably due to excitement. You say the pain's gone now, huh?
Yes. Seemed to vanish the minute I got here.
You've been nervous lately, working hard?
Why, yes, but...
Putting in a lot of nights at the lab?
Well, there's the usual rush around exam time.
Tell me, what did you have for dinner over at Emerson's?
Let's see, shrimp creole, avocado salad.
That's enough for me. Wagner, old boy, you can forget about poisoning. You've got yourself a case of gastritis, that's all.
Oh, I see. Well, I've got to get back to Emerson. Emerson will wonder what will happen to me.
He doesn't know?
No, I didn't want to worry him. Said I was going into the house to phone. Well, I'll say goodnight, Doctor. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, I'm going to walk over with you.
To Emerson's?
Yes. Do you mind?
No.
I was just on my way over when you came. Come on.
But, the dean's rather busy.
That's all right. He's expecting me at 9 o'clock.
Expecting you?
Yes. After you, Wagner.
With the prologue of Hasty Conclusion, the Signal Oil Company presents another strange story by The Whistler.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to The Whistler.
Well, Professor Wagner, it's all changed, isn't it? Your discovery of Dean Emerson's plagiarism almost provided the means of settling yourself into a very comfortable spot. But it's anything but comfortable at the moment. As you stand at the dean's front door with Dr. Phillips, your mind is racing wildly. You were foolish to believe immediately that the dean had poisoned you. Foolish to run to Phillips so quickly. Now you're wondering what they're going to find out there in the summer house. Whether Dean Emerson is alive or dead, and what you will tell them.
Oh, hello, Doctor. Yeah. Right on time. Charles ought to be through with... Why, Professor, I thought you were with George. Well, come in.
I had a slight pain. I went to Phillips to get something for it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you and the Dean almost through?
Why, no. As a matter of fact, there were a few more points we had...
Oh, well, that's all right. We won't rush you.
So kind of you to take Charles with you to the ski club, Doctor.
You're driving Emerson to the ski club?
Yes. Care to come along?
No. I couldn't. I have a busy weekend. I couldn't.
Professor, you seem as nervous as Charles did. What's got into you two?
Well, nothing. Nothing at all. Excuse me. I must get back to the dean.
You go out the rear door, Wagner, into the quiet night. Your heart pounds, choking you in a surge of anxiety as you reach the green lattice building at the far edge of the lawn. At first, you see nothing in the dim lights of the summer house, and you're almost convinced that Emerson has recovered and walked away. Then your eyes focus on the sprawling shape at your feet, right where you left him.
Emerson! Emerson, for heaven's sake! Emerson, please!
Yes, Wagner, dead. You knew he might be, yet you kneel there, stunned, numbly shaking him, totally unprepared, and then... They're coming out here, Wagner, out to the summer house. In half a minute, they'll find you with the body, and the whole college will cry murder. Then you see the square, protecting shape of the nearby garage. You gather a strength you'd forgotten in 20 years of desk work, and quickly drag the body around into the shrubbery behind it.
Have you seen my futures, Doctor?
Yes, Marion, I'm glad you thought of it.
Oh, Professor, isn't Charles out here?
He went to the chemistry building to get a copy of his article.
Oh, how strange. There's a dozen copies in the house. It isn't like him to miss his engagements this way.
That's all right, Marion. I'll tell you. I'll get a ride with Mason and leave my car here for the dean. He can drive up when he's ready.
Well, I'd rather Charles didn't drive over those mountain roads. He's been so nervous lately.
Oh. Well, I guess I've got to wait for him.
Too bad.
Wait a minute, Doctor. There's no use in your doing that.
Doing what?
Delaying your trip this way. See here. Why don't I drive the Dean up in your car?
Well, I thought of that, but you said you'd be busy.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. It's nothing very urgent. I don't like to leave Emerson in a spot like this. Besides, in view of what you said about my being overworked...
You're perfectly right. The change will do you good. Well, that's it then. My car's in the garage here. The Dean is kind enough to rent me his garage. Here are the keys.
This is very nice of you, Professor.
Oh, no, not at all.
Well, I'll see you to the door, Doctor.
Thanks, man. Let my coat...
It's a wild chance, Wagner, but you've got to take it. A possible way to dispose of that burden in the shrubbery behind the garage. There have been accidents before on that steep, snow-covered road that winds up to the ski lodge. Quickly, you drag the body around into the garage and force the awkward shape into the turtleback of the doctor's car. Then you hastily get behind the wheel and step on the starter. Oh,
Professor! Professor, wait! Oh, did Charles come back?
No, I thought I'd pick him up at his office.
Oh, well, here, I brought this bag.
Oh, yes, thank you. I forgot that.
Oh, and his glasses, too. He left them on the dining table.
I'll take them to him.
Well, I don't understand his forgetting them. Well, he can't read without them, and perhaps I'd better drive over with you.
Oh, there's no need for that. I'll take care of everything.
You don't object to driving me to the office, Professor?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, of course not.
Well, thank you. Sure, he hasn't been here, Miss Rose.
I'm sure. He rarely comes to the office at night.
But couldn't he have come in without your knowing it?
Oh, no. I have these reports to finish by morning, and he gave me his key.
Then he didn't mean to come here at all. I don't understand it.
Why don't you let me take you home, Mrs. Emerson? He's probably there by now.
Well, I suppose there's nothing else to do, but I'll wait up for him. I want to be sure he's all right.
Quite a spot, isn't it, Wagner? Mrs. Emerson determined to see her husband and his body in the turtleback of the very car you're riding in. You've got to think of something. Some way to get rid of her. Convince her that the Dean's all right. Then, as you pull up to a stop sign, you notice the lights of a drugstore at the corner, and you begin to see a way out. You pull over to the curb.
Why are you stopping here, Professor?
Just had a thought. He may be at the faculty club. I'll go into this drugstore and phone.
Oh, I'll go.
No trouble. I'll only be a minute.
Dean Emerson's residence?
Is Professor Wagner there?
Why, he and Mrs. Emerson drove off just a few minutes ago.
I see. I'm calling from the faculty club. The dean's just leaving here, and he wants Professor Wagner to meet him in front of his office as soon as he can.
Well, I'll have Mrs. Emerson tell the professor when they return.
Thank you.
You drive Mrs. Emerson home, Wagner, and there the maid delivers the message you so cleverly planted over the phone. Mrs. Emerson's convinced now, and she retires, relieved that her husband is all right. 10 minutes after you leave her, you're on the highway heading the doctor's car toward the mountains. The 60-mile trip is unchallenged until you near the ranger station at the foot of the dangerous 2-mile grade. And then suddenly you remember. The ranger will make a check, and he's got to see 2 men in the car. You put on the brake and pull up at the side of the road. Get out and open the turtleback, and you drag the body up to the front seat. Then you get back in and prop him up beside you. Pull your hat down over his face. Nervous and trying to keep from trembling, you drive on until you're stopped by the ranger.
Sorry, can't let you go on, folks. We're in for a blizzard.
But they're expecting us at the ski lodge.
I guess you can make it as far as the lodge, all right, but you're taking a chance of being snowed in. When we get a storm this late in the spring, it's usually a good one.
We'll take that chance.
Okay, sign the passenger check. Yeah, right here. All right. Other fellow will have to sign, too.
But he's asleep.
Oh, sorry. Regulations.
Yes, but he's had a hard day. I hate to disturb him.
Well, okay, you signed for him, huh?
Yes. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, drive on. Take it easy.
You drive another mile and a half through a trough of snow, looking for a break in the high white walls, some place where you can send the car over the edge. And then, as you reach the narrowest part of the road, you see it. No barrier on the outside, and a sheer drop to the bottom of the ravine far below. You maneuver the car close to the edge, and then open the door on your side, and jump clear as the car with its grisly load plunges over the side. You stumble the rest of the way to the lodge, clawing at your face and tearing your clothes to create the final evidence for your accident story. The distance is farther than you remembered, and you drop with exhaustion as you reach the door and Phillips and Mason hear your faint knock and drag you into the lodge. And as they chafe your hands trying to thaw you out, you gasp your accident story. You watch their faces for a sign of suspicion, but there's nothing but sympathy. You're getting it across, Wagner. They're believing you.
Couldn't see through the windshield. And suddenly I knew we were going over. I called to Emerson to jump.
Steady, Wagner. Better lie down.
But he didn't jump. He was too late.
Come on now. Don't try to talk anymore.
Think we better try to get Emerson?
From that ravine? We're snowed in already. It'll take days.
It was all my fault. I shouldn't...
Forget that. Lie back and rest.
All right.
There you are. Now relax and don't worry. It was an accident. Nobody's going to blame you.
Of course not. It was bound to happen on that road.
Might have been any of us.
You really think so?
Of course. Now, for Pete's sake, relax. You need sleep.
It's going to be all right, Wagner. You can count on us.
Thanks.
Well, Professor Wagner, you're safe now. Safe in bed where Mason and the doctor put you after hearing your story. They've assured you that no one will blame you for the accident. It was a dangerous road. The snow was blinding. You lost control of the doctor's car and jumped clear as it plunged into the steep ravine with Dean Emerson in it. No way they could know that he was already dead when he took that final plunge. You sink into the warm bed, exhausted from your strenuous night. Limp with relief. You drop off immediately and sleep heavily and undisturbed for several hours. Then suddenly you're wide awake, trying to recognize this room, this strange bed. You're fighting to clear your mind when it strikes again, a shattering stab of pain in your stomach. You find yourself doubled up in agony, the same knife-like pain you felt hours before in the summer house.
Doctor! Phillips!
Wagner, what's the trouble?
My stomach. That pain again. Like before.
Pain? Hold on, I'll take a look. Take it easy now. Hurt when I press here?
Oh, stop! Yes, there.
Good Lord, man, it's your appendix.
Appendix?
You threw me off with that poison idea. I made a hasty conclusion.
Hospital. Get me to a hospital.
No time. Too much snow. That's going to break in 1 minute. I've got to operate right now, Wagner. Right here. You game?
Yes. Hurry.
What is it, Phillips?
His appendix. Got to work fast.
Van?
Bad enough to kill him if I don't get to it right now. Stay with him, Mason. I'll get my instruments.
Right.
Good thing he drove up in my car. There's not a thing to work with here.
Good Lord, Mason.
Phillips. What's the matter? What is it?
Mason. My instruments. They're in the car.
I'll go get them.
Oh, you can't. My car's at the bottom of that ravine. He hasn't got a chance, Mason. Wagner hasn't got a chance.
Let
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From May of 1947, it's been Hasty Conclusion, starring Bill Forman as The Whistler. That's all we have time for on this edition of Yesteryear, but back with you again next week at this very same time. Join us and invite a friend to listen to the best of the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, so-dio, vo-dio, do-dio, do.